Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to make our healthcare predictions for 2021. Now, I know we're a month into the year, but we did have to turn back a coup attempt and inaugurate a new president before we felt secure enough to make any predictions. So today, we're going to talk about our healthcare policy predictions for 2021, or what we may see from federal, state, and local governments, and our healthcare practice predictions for 2021, or what we may see from the private market to make the healthcare system work better for its customers. Shining up their crystal balls for us today on the roundup are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchinson, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Well, I had to shovel a lot of snow this week and spread rock salt, really for the first time this season. So like so much in America, winter in Chicago appears to be returning to normal. I'm happy.
All right. Only a Midwesterner would say that, right? Julie?
Well, we're thrilled because Governor Newsom lifted the stay-at-home order for California this week, which is fabulous. But we have received more rain this week than in the last year, I think. So we've really been staying at home.
Well, thank you both. Now, before we ask you about your 2021 healthcare predictions, let me ask you to predict when you'll get your COVID-19 vaccine and what's the first thing you'll do after you get it. Dave, when do you think your number is up and what will you do right after that?
Well, Terry is going to get hers before I will because she's on the board of a long-term care system that's offering shots to their board members. So good for her. I think I'll probably get mine. My shots will be done by spring, you know, so April timeframe. And by then, we'll have been locked up in this house for more than a year. Stir crazy doesn't begin to experience how we're feeling. So once it's safe, we're getting on a plane and blowing this popsicle stand.
Julie, how about you? When do you think your name will be called? And what's the first thing you'll do after you get your shot or shots?
Well, I definitely share Dave's enthusiasm for travel. I have to hope that it's by the time my kids get out of school at the beginning of June, because summer has got to be about travel. And, you know, personally, for my husband and I, we'd like to see a little bit of live music. So maybe return to some life with masks on and have some fun.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm hoping to get mine in March or April. And if that happens, the first thing I'm going to do is go to the movies with my wife. You know, normally we'd debate for hours over what movie to see, but I think after all of this, it really won't matter what's playing. You know, we'll see anything. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. And then I'll get on a plane.
Bunch of rom-coms in your future, Dave. I can see it.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'll be complaining after the first one and things will be really back to normal. All right. Let's talk about your predictions for the year and let's start with policy. Dave, tell us your top three predictions for what federal, state, or local governments may do this year in terms of healthcare policy and why.
So let's start with the feds. It's pretty clear that the Biden administration wants to restore the Affordable Care Act to its pre-Trump form. The executive actions taken to date reflect that. On the legislative front, they're still primarily focused on increasing access. The stimulus bill has buried in it provisions that will grant premiums to higher income individuals and dramatically increase premiums to lower individuals. And we know that the more affordable healthcare is, the more people will take it. So that's where they seem to be. And of course, there's the public option. And so my prediction number one is that the Democrats will push really hard and potentially use extraordinary legislative tactics to get Biden's version of the public option into law, and that will influence non-Medicaid expansion states. I also think there's an outside chance of bipartisan reform legislation built on the Republican-sponsored Fair Care Act, which we've talked about before. At the state level, I'm working on a commentary with Rosemarie Day, who was one of the architects of the Massachusetts Exchange, And that commentary is focusing on healthcare exchanges 2.0. And I've just been struck by the huge amount of innovation that has occurred and is occurring in the 13 state-based exchanges, individual mandates, reinsurance provisions, expanded premium subsidies, adjusted service mixes, offering out estate plans, elimination of deductibles, and so on. So prediction number two at the state level is more states will develop their own exchanges, and there will be even more innovation across exchanges based on what's working. And then at the local level, and I'm just going to go straight to the prediction, I believe we're going to see more collaboration on preventing and managing chronic conditions across sectors, education, housing, social services, clinics, and policing, and so on. And that's a great thing.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, same thing. What are your top three predictions for government healthcare policy for 2021, and why do they top your list?
You know, I read a quote from Bill Frist that said, you know, inflection points really demand change perspectives, change understanding, and change behaviors on our part. And I'm one of those optimists, I guess, Dave, that really thinks we're going to have some change behaviors. My first prediction is Medicare is going to go deep and make telemedicine coverage permanent. And obviously, they're going to focus on safeguarding that care and likely move towards determining some sort of fair payment as opposed to complete payment parity like we've had. But I really hope that happens because I think we have a chance with telehealth. You know, I think they're going to look at all sorts of multi-channel delivery, text, chatbots, phone-based care. You know, they've gone deep in really analyzing this. I hope that we're going to see the cross-state licensing barriers disappear as well as the place of care. Some of those rules that CMS has had in place for a long time. I also personally look at this and say, it's one of those areas where you can make the public happy, right? Especially looking at how we close the digital divide. Telehealth is a great approach to reducing inequities through ubiquitous access to care. So there's great ways to position what we need to be doing around access here. Second, getting down to the states, I think Biden's going to strengthen and expand Medicaid coverage. So Dave and I can agree there. You know, I think we'll see a lot of social determinant activity here because the states that have been on the forefront have really been focusing on social determinants in Medicaid. And I think this is a place where the feds and states will love to leverage Medicaid also for health equity. But I don't think we're going to get a lot done on health equity this year at all. I think we'll talk a lot about it, which is fantastic. But social determinants is where it's at. Some of the most innovative states this year, I think, will actually begin to create models that other states can follow. So that's exciting. Number three for me is exactly what Dave said at the community level with a bit of a twist. I think we'll see some effort to really rebuild the safety net in communities around the fact that the safety net has just kind of been destroyed in a lot of what COVID has brought and what changing payment policy has brought to their business model. So, you know, if you look at community efforts like Nashville Health that have been kind of rolling along for years, it now has a purpose around what COVID has brought, and it has organizations that need to work together and find business models to really support the community. So I think that will be very good for the safety net.
Got it. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments or her list?
Well, the one area I'm kind of really interested in seeing what happens is on the regulatory front. This week, we saw a pretty harsh interpretation by CMS. It was really the last act of the outgoing Trump administration regarding site neutrality and some repayment of overpayment of hospitals looking to get hospital-based payments for ambulatory facilities. You've also got the transparency on insurance contracts, negotiated in commercial insurance contracts, data interoperability, and so on. So I'm wondering the extent to which the Biden administration will continue what started in the Obama administration and gained acceleration during the Trump administration of using the regulatory process to really push for more level field competition, more transparency, more value in the system. So, and I believe they will. So that's the area I'm focused on.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Let's talk about the private sector now. Julie, what are your top three predictions or trends for what will happen in the healthcare market this year and why?
You know, I think there's a lot going on. It was actually really hard to get down to three. So don't be mad at me, Dave, but I have 3.5. Number one, I'll say the stronger are going to get stronger and the weaker are going to get weaker until they're perhaps bought by the stronger. You know, we have something like 47 unicorns or something with just enormous valuations. And it's creating a whole new category of acquirers. So whether it's those companies like the Teladoc Livongos of the world or health plans sitting on the sidelines with just enormous balance sheets, I think the smart money is going to take those balance sheets and start looking for some real companies that are strategically aligned and make acquisitions to really advance more digital enablement. And it's going to be an incredible decade for digital innovation, just amazing. And I think we'll end up with some companies that actually are real and scalable and bring solutions that have been, you know, thought through for the end market and what needs to happen to transform the industry. So good times there. Second, my prediction is that mental health solutions will grow faster than any other part of healthcare innovation. This is kind of the no duh prediction, but it says a lot to say that mental health will grow faster than any other category. These multiple events have obviously set us up for this with COVID and everything else that happened in 2020. And, you know, we're already starting to see sprouting innovative approaches deliver coaching, clinical and other mental health services that are yielding literally entirely new ways that payers are thinking about providing access to their members and employers also providing access to their employees. So I think both will invest more because mental health will ultimately lower medical costs, as we know, and hopefully lower turnover of employees and increase satisfaction all around. And the capital is rolling in. So I'll be interested to see whether the capital invested in mental health is also higher than any other part of healthcare. And while I'm on employers, this is my 2.5 cheat. We always hope that self-insured employers are going to come in and really drive material change in healthcare. And I think what's interesting right now is that employers are wanting to bring employees back more confidently, right, back to work, and are getting serious about how they not only attract but retain the more fragile categories, like, unfortunately, women. We've lost a lot of ground with women in the workplace. So we're seeing a lot of employers look at women and family support tools and solutions that provide real support and caregiving, virtual triage, musculoskeletal health, and several other health-related categories that could also really help reduce benefit costs over time. And my number three point is, I don't think there'll be much muscle on drug pricing this year. Pharma companies are having their heyday, as we all know, back in the limelight, saviors of our society. And frankly, you know, sort of rightfully so. And it's going to make it exceedingly difficult for any kind of regulation on drug prices for at least the next year. On the bright side, I do see the emergence of some next generation PBMs that may start to chip away at drug prices in new and novel ways. But, you know, old school PBMs are going to continue to be under the microscope for their practices.
Yeah, well, we took a vote and 3.5 is okay. So you're good.
Thanks.
All right, Dave, what tops your list of healthcare market news or trends in 2021? And why did those make your top three?
Well, three cheers for market-driven reform, as Julie so eloquently outlined it. I am hopeful that pharma will have its day in the sun, but that sun will set and the pressure will go back on. I'm a little bit intrigued by 2.5, Julie, the employers taking a bigger hand. Medicare's direct contracting proposals are due in April, and there's a lot of activity around that, and that translates pretty directly, potentially, into direct contracting with private employers. And so the extent to which we can expand the risk-based contracting mechanisms, I think that has real power. You know, when we change the way we pay for healthcare, we can start to change the way we deliver healthcare. And in that context, you know, I've named the U.S. healthcare system Cecil, and I picture him as aging, bloated, riddled with chronic conditions, grumpy, self-focused, but treatable. And basically, you got swimming around inside the body politic value antibodies that are trying to kill the chronic anti-competitive conditions that that are wreaking havoc. So where am I going with this? I'm sure you're wondering. Of all of the future reports that I saw, the one that impressed me the most was by the IDC. And the provision that impressed me the most was what they were saying about what will happen with private insurance, how it will become more portable and personalized. And in essence, they're looking at 60% of future insurance being in standardized models and 40% in kind of individualized concierge model, but completely portable and with dynamic health scores like a FICO for your relative wellness in the context of setting community ratings and individualizing benefits. So that, to me, has the potential to be the type of dam-breaking event that really starts to shift payment on the commercial side in ways that become more consumer-focused and more value-oriented. And that, in combination with what the government's doing, I think has the potential to fundamentally break some of these structural barriers we've been hammering against in healthcare for decades.
Great. Thanks, Dave. And that was quite a visual. I had to make sure my camera wasn't on. It sounded a little familiar.
Cecil, U.S. Healthcare. That's take it to the bank, Dave. Take it to the bank.
All right. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
The only thing I didn't mention that I think is will be interesting also is Medicare Advantage is, you know, continuing to really heat up. And to the extent that competition becomes even more fierce in that category as well, I think you could see seniors really benefit from competition and, you know, $0 premium type plans for them, which would be, I think, a net positive thing.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. Now, breaking with tradition on the roundup, we won't talk about your predictions for next week because that's all we've been talking about. So instead, let me ask you for one piece of advice that you'd share with President Biden in his fight against the pandemic. Julie, if you had Biden's ear, what would you tell him?
Well, this is pretty similar to what we talked about weeks and weeks ago in the fall, but I would bring celebrities. I would look at this like a consumer brand company. It's like a series of Super Bowl ads. All the professional athletes, musicians, and, you know, Hollywood types that are appealing to those groups in this country who are questioning and hesitant about the vaccine. So let's really embrace culture.
Yeah, it's kind of like I want my MTV, but I want my COVID vaccine, right?
Exactly.
All right, Dave, what's your piece of COVID-19 advice for Biden next week?
Well, I think Biden confronts what my New England friends call a really wicked problem. And it's got two parts. The first is on the manufacturing, distribution, and administration of the vaccines. And my advice there is just more of the same. I mean, it's a massive logistical challenge, and he's really gone to war footing on that. And then my second is really kind of gets to what Julie's talking about, is winning the hearts and minds of Americans. We're a big, diverse country, and there are big segments out there that are reluctant to take vaccines, and we need to get inside their heads and figure out what's motivating that. We also have to double down on the social distancing behaviors, particularly as these new strains are coming out. So I'm right. And my own contribution to this is I want to start a stick it to COVID campaign. So there you go.
That's pretty catchy. All right. Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. Okay, that does it for the roundup today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You can also find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.